Welcome to Full Potential, Thriving with Neurodiversities. I'm your host, Sarah Intonato. This podcast teaches parents of children with neurodiversities, such as autism, ADHD, learning disabilities, and beyond, to support their kids in reaching their full potential so that they can thrive, instead of letting stereotypes define them. My mission is to end suffering amongst these parents by giving them the tools to heal themselves, which in turn empowers them to be bold, confident advocates for their children. By addressing a variety of topics, such as well-being, advocacy, and spirituality, these parents stop being the victims of a broken system and instead succeed in providing their unique children with exactly what they need to thrive and share their gifts with the world. One by one, these families now change the world through their uniqueness instead of being victimized by it. Are you ready? Let's get started. Hello, hello, and welcome. Thank you so much for joining today's podcast episode where I'm hosting a very special guest and also a very special friend, my dear colleague, Padma Ali. And Padma is a masterful coach. She works with individuals to find their true purpose, their dharma in their life, and to live a life that is really aligned, whether personally, professionally, probably both. And I'm so honored to have her here, both because this is something she's incredibly passionate about doing that I know will serve our audience today, but also because she has a background as a therapist. So she has really seen the whole gamut of things that people struggle with in their lives and have to navigate, whether it's something that they expected or didn't expect. And I always say that nobody expects to parent a neurodiverse child. It's not one of the things people talk to you about when you're preparing to become a parent. And yet here we are, parents of kids who are different. And what we're going to talk about today is really relevant to this topic because many of you know I have a history as a devoted yoga practitioner and teacher. And Padma is also incredibly devoted to her spiritual practice, but our spiritual practices have some crossover, some differences. And Padma's also a parent who discovered her spiritual practices, please correct me, Padma, if I'm mistaken, after she became a parent, not before. And we're going to break down how these practices have helped her tremendously in her life as a parent and as an individual. And also how having a spiritual practice can help you, because there is this trend in parenting a child who's different that your daily life is so demanding around your child that parents are pouring all their energy into their children. And yet when you pour at least some of that energy back into yourself, so much is possible and so much beauty is possible, including the energy around your child as well. So Padma, if I left anything out in your introduction, please let me know. If there's anything that you want to dive right into from there, please go ahead as well.
Thank you for this beautiful introduction, Sarah. It's so good to be here and serve your audience and talk about these topics that most people don't talk about. The first thing I'm actually going to say is, as a parent, and just simply as a parent, like, it is, you know, one of our mentors calls children black holes, like black holes. and this is meant as no offense, because children are beautiful and I'm so grateful for my kids because they've been one of my best teachers. But parenting is a hard job, no matter how you put it, whether you have children who are neurodiverse, their children who are not, like, it takes a lot of energy.
Yes.
And my kids are not diagnosed, but my daughter, I've always suspected that she has something is very different about her. And I don't know, she doesn't fit all the boxes when you take her for testing, but she's very energetically sensitive, but there's more to her.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you said that, because I get many emails from people saying, hey, I've taken my kid for testing and nothing's showing up, but that doesn't change the fact that we're still struggling in this way at home, or they're still struggling in this way in school. And because there's no label, it almost makes it harder for the people in their lives to see how to support them, because there's no specific trajectory of, oh, okay, they have dyslexia, now we have to do this, for example. There's no map. There's no roadmap. And so it almost is more challenging for parents when they have a child who's presenting with what I call being energetically sensitive, because you don't go to school and say, hey, my kid's energetically sensitive. What are you going to do about that? Schools don't talk that way. So it even, I think, can be a little bit more challenging for the parent, because it's harder for them to get answers or supports. They have to really be the person to spearhead and test different things to see what works for their children. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, that's my kid, the one who something's up with them, but no one can figure it out, no one can diagnose them, and we're sort of in it right now, please keep listening, because this episode will help you.
Yeah, it is. You've named it so beautifully, because my daughter's five, and her teacher, her current teacher, she's a little bit on the more, I would say she has a stronger tone. That's the best way I can put it. She means really well, and I wouldn't send her to that school if I didn't think this was okay for her. Mm. But my kid would come back home and say, when my teacher talks to me, my heart hurts. Mm. And things like that. And so she's that sensitive to even the slightest change in tone or what is expected, or suddenly she'll go from being, you know, like just happy and like talking, and then suddenly the buttons will get switched and I'm going to have a different kid, like in a split second. And I don't know what makes the switches flip. And this is where I've had to use a lot of my own spiritual practices, because spiritual practice is not like a one-time sit down, meditate. It is like day to day. How can you utilize your spiritual practice in moment by moment with a yes. child who is demanding in those moments? Like, she needs something from me and I don't know what it is, and I cannot get her to calm down. And this is how she's been from day one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my son is the opposite. Like nothing phases him. I mean, like I could lose my cool, crazy, like I could be upset and whatever. And he's going to be like, okay, whatever, and move on. Like, it does not phase him. Whereas with her, God forbid, I just say even like, don't do that. And it's like, I don't know what I'm going to get, either a sulky child or someone who's be like, she's like, I'm going to leave the house right now.
Yeah. And I always think of that metaphor of you can't pour from an empty cup. And there are some days as a parent where you don't have to pour very much of your energy into your kids. They only need a few drops. And there are some days where they need the whole cup. And what are you going to do if your cup is empty to start with? That's when we lose our tempers and feel frustrated and sometimes spiral into stress and worry and fear, because when your endurance is low, you're going to start asking yourself questions like, how can I keep going like this? If I'm already feeling depleted now, what happens if she does this again tomorrow? What happens if she does this every day for a month? How am I going to handle that? And I would love, Padma, if you could speak to what parenting was like for you as you were just starting or before you started your spiritual journey.
So my spiritual journey started when I was way in my 20s and all that. I mean, it's more how have I used my spiritual practices with parenting? Like, that is where I've had to make that big leap, because I always had spiritual practices where I was meditating or I was doing self-care, and the connection with spirit was always there. Parenting threw a wrench in all of that. That's the best way I can put it, because what would happen is, even with my, and I had children very much later in my life. Like, I was almost 40 when I had my son and almost 43 when I had my daughter. So I was like well into living life on my terms. And now there comes a child who is so demanding. And my spiritual practice is literally where I had to throw everything out of the window because it didn't work. I could not sit and meditate to calm myself down. I had to find that meditative moment in the moment of being with an infant who had trouble, or like, it was not an easy journey. Parenting has not been easy for me. And they've both had some challenges as they were, you know, from the time they were born. Like, it's just part of parenting. But I wasn't prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And with my spiritual practice, it was like a day to day, I had to be like, okay, how can I be with this being who needs so much from me and still take care of myself? And sometimes I would look like just taking some deep breaths and reassuring myself that I am on the right path. It also brought up a lot of my own trauma from my childhood. Like, of course, right? Like things that we don't expect, no one tells you. Everybody paints this beautiful picture of like, you have this baby and oh, wow, like this, you know, the Instagram photos of, you know, these beautiful, pretty looking nurseries and all that crap. Like it was not my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so, right. And so it was, how do I come back to myself? Because that's what I call a spiritual practice. It is like coming home to you, finding that balance within you as you are interacting with another being in your life.
Yeah. I remember when I was pregnant the second time, I thought I was going to have another boy automatically because I have a sister and we are very close in age as well. So I think I always just assumed that I would parent two of the same gender for whatever reason. I don't know why. And then I remember when I found out I was having a girl, I remember my husband said, you know, you get what you're supposed to get. And I smile and think of that at so many different moments on my parenting journey, because I remember when I was pregnant with Rocco, my child who's neurodiverse and on the autism spectrum, who is a very spiritually evolved being. And I remember we talked about, you know, what do you think your child will be like before you meet your child? And you wonder, you know, what's this little person going to be like when they arrive here? And Ben said, I don't know what he's going to be like, but I hope I get someone who changes the world. And I said, yeah, me too. And that's exactly what we got, right? And then with my daughter, I remember again, like I got the easy parenting journey with her. Very straightforward, very energetically sensitive, very deep feelings, but no problems in school, no problems socially, no problems with her health, which is very straightforward. And I remember like, oh, I got exactly what I was supposed to get overall in this parenting experience to teach me the lessons that I needed to learn as a being having this human experience. I would never have grown into the person who I am today had I not been delivered these little teachers, as you put it, who took what I thought was my version of reality, threw it out the window for me, and forced me to build a new one. And I chuckled the other day speaking with a friend who has a new baby, only a few weeks old. And she was commenting how her partner is so controlled and efficient in his life and, you know, became a dad in his early 50s that he's just like, why isn't this easy and efficient? Why can't I control this? And I just laughed because, you know, there's nothing controllable about having a newborn. There's nothing efficient about having a newborn. It's a newborn. They're going to teach you so much in their tiny human form. And I just laughed and said, oh, well, he's getting the lesson he's supposed to get in this lifetime at this moment. And how beautiful that this sweet baby is delivering him that lesson, because he'd probably never receive it if someone like me delivered it to him instead. He'd probably just shut the door and say, oh, forget it. But when it's your child, there is that willingness to ebb and flow, to grow and change. And sometimes because you want to, and sometimes because you have to.
Right. And that's where these spiritual practices come so handy. So I'm going to talk about spiritual practices from two angles. One is like the sit down, what kind of, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4 types of spiritual practices. And then the other one is the spiritual practices that you can use in the moment, like you're saying with that newborn, like how do you connect back with yourself? And what does spiritual practice really mean? Like, and that's something that's going to be unique to each person listening.
Yeah.
Because your spiritual practice might, for me, it's like really connection to myself. That is the deepest spiritual practice that I can ever lean into. And so how can you be in that moment with a newborn, with a 5-year-old, with a 10-year-old, or with a 15-year-old? Doesn't matter, right? Like at any age, you're going to have different challenges with your child. And how do you be with your child in those moments with connecting with yourself? And this is where, exactly what you said, Sarah, like about looking at them as teachers, like what are they here to teach me in this moment? What is my lesson? How can I show up and be the best version of me, and also guide, show them what are they reflecting back to me that I can take back to them? Because they're also learning. They're also learning so many life lessons with us. Like when I lose my cool with my kids, which sometimes happens, like this morning was like a complete shit show, like getting out of the house. Like it is, some of those days are inevitable with the full moon. Everybody's energies was like completely, and my kids are very sensitive and so am I. So with the full moon yesterday, like, I don't know, we all got up the wrong side of the bed.
Yeah.
Right. And so in that, like I was losing my cool, but then they have something to learn from that experience too.
Yeah.
And I can talk about like how I talk about spiritual practices with them as well. Because you have to remind them.
Yeah.
Remind them of connecting. They come connected with themselves. Like you see with Rocco, like he just knows who he is. And he can show you in very many different ways. But sometimes for kids, they need to learn how to connect back with you as you are engaging with the world.
So how do you teach that to your children, knowing that you're doing it yourself so you can model it to them? I'm sure they have moments where they see, mom's meditating in her room, so I'm not going to talk to her now. Or if I try to talk to her, she's not going to answer me because this is her quiet time. Or other things that they might witness. So they're seeing you model the behavior for them, but how do you remind them in other ways when they need to, as one of our spiritual teachers who we have in common calls it, remember who you really are?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a beautiful question. So it is, they're only 5 and he just turned 9. So they're very little. So the nature is a beautiful way to connect with your own self and also with spirituality. So one of the things I recently started doing, which just came to me, we were on a hike and I asked them and they were like chatter, 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 chatter. And I was like, I just need a moment of silence right now because I want to tune in. So I said, let's make a game. It just came out of nowhere. And I was like, wow, this works. This is parenting, right? It's like one giant experiment.
Yes.
So I told them, we're going to play a game. We're going to be in silence for 5 minutes. And I want you to tell me what you observe when we are walking in silence. So at the end of this 5 minutes, and we set a timer because, you know, I also have to respect that only 5 and 8 or 9, like, and so I can't like expect them to be in silence for 20 minutes. Right. So 5 minutes. And when the timer went off, I was like asking, okay, what did you see and hear? And the things that they told me, my little one said, I heard the wind dance with the grass. I was like, what? I was blown away. Wow. Like these specific words for her to say, I heard the wind dance with the grass. And then my son said, I connected with the ancient ones. We live in Sedona. So, you know, the beautiful, beautiful red rocks, and they're ancient ones there. And so he's like, I connected with the ancient ones. And then, I mean, we all played a game. So my husband was like, okay, I heard this beautiful bird and I saw this hole on the ground, which probably was, you know, like things that we wouldn't notice if our brain is chattery. And so it's simple things like that. And then I also have, I have a pan drum for them.
Yeah.
It was actually a gift from somebody. It's a small child-sized pan drum. So I have my children play that. I mean, they're like tinkering with it and then they play happy birthday on it. Like they play twinkle, twinkle, like small things, because the sound healing, sound also makes you connect with the other part of your brain and also with your higher self. And so they're literally only 3 minutes long. So anyone listening, it's not like we're sitting and oming all day. Like, no, it's not happening. My son has he loves video games. And like, so it's a balance.
Yeah.
But my job is to plant these seeds.
Yeah.
They have a flute. So I'm giving them tools, like physical tools, as well as guidance. Like we set our intentions every day. So these are the different ways I invite them to connect with themselves. And with me, like I have very strong boundaries. Like they're not allowed. If I'm sitting on my bed and my eyes are closed, that means I'm meditating. That is the cue for them. So they're not allowed to come and talk to me. They can sit quietly next to me. They can come in, but they're not allowed to talk to me, which is when I get very, that's a trigger for me. I like a lot of silence.
Yeah. And me too. And yet here we are as mothers in this earthly plane, getting lessons we need to get. I like a lot of silence as well. And it's true. People talk about, you know, oh, as a parent, I need to do my spiritual practice. I need to meditate, as you said. But what they don't often talk about is what you just highlighted so beautifully, that you probably need to put some boundaries around your spiritual practice so that the people in your life learn that it's important to you, including your children, because they don't automatically know that. And I meet parents who will make a solid attempt to do their spiritual practice, whatever that may be, meditation, journaling, singing, what have you. And then their child knocks on the door and expects breakfast or something that they need. And it's not the child's fault.
Right.
How do they know that this is a sacred time for you unless you communicate that to them and put a boundary around it? And this is the unglamorous side of boundaries. It might take energy to uphold that boundary, especially in the beginning. I remember my kids were toddlers when I was doing my yoga practice at home. And I had a rule much like yours. You can come in, you can sit and watch, you can put a mat next to me and go for it by yourself next to me, but there's no talking. And there's no coming onto my mat during that time. And of course, the first day, you know, what happens? The door opens, they come in, mom, 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 mom. They're not doing anything wrong. They're doing what they're used to doing. They call my name, I respond.
Right. So
it's going to take some practice for them to realize, oh, when mom's on her mat, she doesn't respond. That's right. She said this was her quiet time. I'm going to go over there and ask dad for this thing instead.
Right.
And that takes practice. And I see that when parents are kind of teetering on the brink of frustration, those little moments are the things that make them feel very discouraged. Oh, I tried and it didn't work out, or it's just not possible to do it in my home. Well, then ask yourself what you need to make it possible, because there might be some energetic exchange that has to be put into place to get things going. Just like a rocket uses a huge amount of its fuel taking off. Same is true as you're setting up these routines at home with family, but they pay off in ways that you can't expect. I remember when my daughter was a few years older, so probably 4 or 5, and she'd now watched me do my practices at home for years, had gotten used to the routine, messy in the beginning, but then got used to it. One day, she was totally overstimulated, you know, had spent the day with grandma and grandpa, which probably meant she'd had some sugar that I don't normally give her, probably had missed a nap or something, was tired. And all of that, as you know, as a parent, is a recipe for a meltdown. So she was getting to that point. And I must have been at the store or something. And all of a sudden, my phone buzzed, and it was a picture of her wearing a mermaid costume, sitting on the couch with her hands in Yana Mudra, with her eyes closed, meditating. And the text beneath it from my husband said, Aurelia gave herself a timeout. She felt that she was going into a bad place that did not feel like herself. So she just announced she needed to be quiet. And then I found her in the living room like this. I didn't tell her to go there. She was still in her mermaid outfit. I didn't tell her, go take a timeout. I didn't tell her, go meditate. She recognized in herself, this does not feel good, but I have tools to change it. And she was only 5. So those boundaries, while they can be uncomfortable in the beginning for you to establish your routines, can be the things that really teach your children very powerfully that these tools are available to them as well. And Padma, I'm sure you have all kinds of stories like that, like your hiking story, even how beautiful that Anaya heard the wind and the grass dance. And that's not something that you read about in, you know, school books.
Oh my God, that's such a beautiful story.
I still have the picture with the mermaid outfit.
That is just incredible. But that speaks to the power of the sowing seed. Because yes, that's what you did, like with your demonstration of this is my sacred time. This is what we do to calm our bodies and our mind down. You planted the seeds for her and she took it and ran with it.
Yeah.
And boundaries, like I think about this with parenting. So much of parenting is repetition. And most people get frustrated because they're like, okay, I have said this once and you need to know, but that is not how parenting works. Does this mean when I said like, they're not allowed to talk to me, do you think they don't come? They come, they even try even now, but they know I'm not going to respond.
Right.
And I have actually told them this, and I speak with my kids as though they're adults. Like I literally talk to them like that because I feel like that is they know, and they're also very evolved souls. I feel like they're in the little itty bitty bodies, but they are much more evolved than I can give them credit for. So I talk to them as adults and I say, when my meditation is disturbed, or when I'm in my silence and you come and disturb me, I become cranky. So I tell them, do you want a cranky mom or do you want a calm and peaceful mom? I'll give you all my attention after I'm done. And they're like, yeah, I want a calm and peaceful mom. I'm like, all right, you know.
Yeah.
A little bit of like coaching with them directly. They understand these things. They get it.
Yeah.
And so it's like literally parenting with children is like minute by minute by minute by minute practice.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that reminder too, because, you know, our spiritual teacher who we spoke about before has said, you can connect to your true self when you're washing the dishes. If you have the intention to do that and you take a moment, that's all it takes is a moment to steady yourself and unplug from whatever stimuli are around you. And it's a choice. And I think that's a powerful reminder because especially when you're a parent, especially when you're a new parent, you may not have the 15 minutes to sit and meditate, especially if you have a new baby who needs to be fed or many children who need you. But you might have 30 seconds while you're washing a dish where you can just pause and feel the water on your hands and have gratitude for the fact that you have water in your home. And what a gift that is that we take for granted every single day. And those are the moments that really make a difference. Those bigger chunks are very powerful. Thank goodness we make the time to do that. But Pema Chodron, who was a Tibetan monk in recent years, very openly talked about, you want to meditate, stop what you're doing and take 3 very deep, very complete breaths. Get into that state. And she reminded everyone, of course you have the time to do that. Everyone has the time to do that. You're breathing anyway. You might as well do it intentionally to pause and ground and center yourself in that moment. And I like to remind all of my clients, you can do that before you hit send on the email to the teacher. You can do that before you answer your phone. You can do that before you prepare school lunch, especially if you're thinking about all the million and one things you have to do and you're exhausted and cranky when you're preparing school lunch versus thinking about putting good energy into that lunch that they're going to eat or any meal that you're making. It's those moments that to me make an enormous difference. And it reminds me of a neighbor who I had many years ago, and she was thrown in the house next to me. Not a coincidence, right? Like we were meant to be neighbors and connect. And she beautifully modeled to me and reminded me that there are so many moments of choice when one of her children was going through cancer treatments and he is happy and healthy and well now. Thankfully, we're wonderful. We're so thankful for that. But she said, I remember being in the hospital with him. You know, he was going through chemo and he was only a teenager. And people would think I was crazy because I would write sticky notes and tape them around the room of positive mantra or words that made us feel good. And I would take his medicine bottles and I would write on them, this is healing, or I am healed. And all the nurses thought I was nuts because they'd get all these medicine bottles and all these IV bags with positive things written all over them. And I reminded them, and I reminded myself, you know, being joyful is a choice. I have everything around me that could remind me to feel sad or worried or afraid. And I know those things won't help me. They will certainly not help my child. So I'm going to choose something else. And she said, every day you wake up and it was, you choose again. Every hour you choose again. And then if you have a moment where you falter, that's okay, because you'll have a chance to choose again in a few more minutes. And it was such a powerful reminder that, you know, who's to say she was not doing a spiritual practice because she wasn't at home on her meditation cushion that day, or at the yoga studio on her mat, or out on the hiking trail in the mountains surrounded by the majesty of nature. No, she was in an ugly place that she didn't want to be. And yet, look at what she was able to do because she chose. And I love that reminder because it's so easy, I think, for people to look at their life circumstances, especially when they have a high needs child and life, let's just face it, is more complicated. You have more responsibilities, full stop. And what's a tiny choice you can make right now to shift your internal state? Maybe you can't go to the yoga studio for 2 hours today, but maybe you can pause and give gratitude for your health or your water that you're drinking. It can be that simple, right?
It is very much that simple. Because what is spiritual practice? At the end of the day, what is spirituality? It is like elevating your vibration and frequency. But yes, that story, Sarah, I was just blown away, because that is spiritual practice, because you're shifting your vibration and frequency with your thoughts.
Yeah.
And think about it, like when we're in nature, when we're meditating, that's what we're doing. We're literally quietening the chatter of the brain and accessing higher consciousness. And the best way to access higher consciousness is to have a quiet brain and positive vibration and frequency. That is all a spiritual practice. And it doesn't matter how you get there. The road is not important. Like you are doing the work every day. And I love what you said about the thoughts, about like putting those positive notes. Because I have that in my desk everywhere. Like this is how, like, I have to demonstrate to my kids. But I teach my kids that too. Like my daughter, like my son, like he literally walks through life. Like it's so interesting to see two different children coming from the same parents, same environment, same everything, but so different, right? Yeah. So he is literally untouched. Like that's how he walks around, and literally looks like he's like walking, like kind of like floating through life. And like, he's just like nothing. He's the most, he's very popular in class and everybody loves him. And just like, that is who he is. My daughter, on the other hand, wow, it's different. She's very, very different. And she gets affected by energies. And she's like, I don't want to go to school. Nobody likes me. I mean, like, I'm like, you're five. You can't be like that. I'm not smart enough. I'm like, what the heck?
Wow.
I'm like, where are you getting this from? Yeah. Like, and right. And so I started talking to her about the power of our thoughts. And I told her, like, does that thought make you feel good? And she says, no. So I said, okay, how can we shift that thought? What is a thought that would make you feel better? Mm. So she said, I'm good. I'm happy. I love myself. So we do affirmations at night. That's another way of bringing that energy back. Right. And so she said, I love myself. I said, okay, how does that make you feel? She says, I feel good. I said, okay, then we're going to replace. No one likes me. Why no one liking me? Because one child didn't play with her. I was like, okay, wow. Like, look at that. Right? How can we shift that to saying, okay, what is a more empowering thought? But you can start with your kids from that very, very base level. We don't need to have them sit and meditate for like 20 minutes every day. You can
start. And they won't.
No, in our home, we do attempt, not for 20 minutes, but for 5 minutes. And it is often results in giggling fests and, did this and he did that. And like, it's fine. It's more planting the seeds.
Yeah. Yeah. I often remind myself and people in my house that my chanting teacher, who I've chanted the Yoga Sutra and the Vedas with, would often remind me that when you're using your voice, your mind can't be someplace else 99.9% of the time. If you're chanting with full intention to make a sound very specifically, then you can't really do that effectively for a while and be spiraling with your worry thoughts or worrying about people not liking you, right? Like, you have to pour yourself into what you're doing. And so even something so simple as playing a chant in the background, making one sound from that chant with intention, having your kids do it with you, it will probably dissolve into giggles after a few minutes, but get them started, show them that it's available, especially if you have children who like to use their voice. Some kids really love to sing or to talk. And we all know a child who the parent is like, my child won't stop talking, you know, this is a lot. That's a perfect exercise for them. Let them use their voice and feel the resonance of it when connecting to their voice in a powerful way. And what I really want all parents to hear is that there's no one right spiritual tool that you have to use. There's not a list that Padma and I are going to give you that talks about these are the things you have to do. Every family is different. Every life is different. Look for the things that resonate with you. You may not have found them yet. You may already know what they are. I have had spiritual practices for years, and I've recently embraced new ones as well. And it's been so exciting to see that become part of my life and how my whole family has taken them for their own too. And it's something that now that my kids are a little older, they're 11 and 12, we can talk about together. And it's given us new supportive language for them as they enter their preteen years to remember, oh, you're not alone. You have so many ways to access inner guidance and energy and support so that you don't feel like you're going into this new scary experience on your own. Connect to the energy, connect to the divinity that's always around you. It's been very comforting for them to remember, oh yeah, I'm not by myself, especially as we moved to a new town in recent years, like you did. And to remember that they're always supported, they have to make the choice to connect to that support in whatever way feels good for them. But adults are no different.
Right. And you nailed it, Sarah. Like every family is different. What resonates for one person is not going to resonate for another. Yes, you can have all the spiritual tools. Like I have crystals everywhere, but for someone like my sister who is very spiritual, the crystals don't speak much to her. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like you do what feels good to you. The bottom line of spiritual practices is to help you be in an elevated state. And whatever way you can get there, whether it's in nature, whether it's through yoga or through meditation and through just keeping your thoughts at a higher frequency, you're going to get there. And how can you bring that same tools to your kids? And that will come through primarily you shifting yourself. They're watching everything.
Absolutely. And one thing that I want to remind families of, especially knowing that the listeners of this podcast have a full plate of responsibility and they're dealing with variables that they may not have expected to deal with. They might seem intimidating at times. And there are many sort of social stories around what's possible with those variables being present in your life. Everything from I've had the societal stories around, oh, your child has this diagnosis, he'll never be able to go to this kind of school. Or, oh, your child can't do that. Oh, well, then you should only have these expectations and nothing more. And I want to remind you that whatever you're facing that seems intimidating in your life, remember, you're not facing it alone. If you can embrace even these small spiritual practices in your day, you will feel more supported. And if that's all that happens as a result of your spiritual practices, it might seem tiny, but really what a gift for you to feel a little more uplifted as you move through your day, a little bit less lonely as you move through your day. And I remember when I took one of my first trips to India and then came home, it was like coming home from Mars and trying to explain to people what a month in Mars had been like, doing this immersive spiritual study and then coming home to the very 3D physical Long Island, New York home. And I remember telling a friend of mine who was more of a veteran in the spiritual practice world at that time and saying, you know, it feels really wonky to come home and feel like nobody understands me and I'm the weird one and all these things. And it's lonely when I wake up and it's still dark out and I'm getting on my yoga mat and there's no one around and by myself and I miss the community. And she said, when I wake up and I'm alone and it's dark out, I remind myself of all the people all over the world at that very moment who are doing their spiritual practice. And it reminds me that I'm not alone. At the very least now, you can have that visual for yourself too. If you're pausing to take 3 deep breaths while you're washing the dishes, think of all the moms who listen to this podcast who are now going to do the same thing. And remember that as you do it, it's that collective energy that's going to elevate you along the way. Padma, thank you so much for being here and sharing so honestly with everyone listening. And I would love to know, how can people find you? Because I know people will resonate with everything that you've said.
I have a podcast called Create Your Vibrant Life podcast, in which you were a guest of, and the episode is going to be released tomorrow. I'm December 9th.
Nice.
Right. And I don't know when this will be released, but December 9th is when it's going to be. I can't wait. I can't wait for that to be out. And on Instagram at Padma Ali. And then my website is padmaali.com. So any of these places you can find me. And thank you so much for having me here,
thank
Sarah.
Thank you. And I, in closing, will take off my professional hat and put on my Sarah the Friend hat. And I will say that when I first met Padma in person, we had met online first. And then when we met in person, it just felt like I'd known her for decades already. And I think there is that element of, we had that spiritual thread in common that we probably have known each other for many lifetimes. And this is just our first time remembering that in this physical body. And it felt so at home for me to have a friend like that, and have a friend that no matter what I told her, she would not think it was too far out, you know? And so for me, that was very, very special. So Padma, thank you for being your beautiful self. Thank you for being in my life in all ways. And thank you for helping our listeners today.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Be well, everybody. Take care. If today's show resonated with you, please leave a review through your favorite podcast provider, as it's an important step in allowing new listeners to find us when they need to hear this message in their own lives.